I'm looking at 10 years of Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
Hey, what's up?
I'll leave you alone forever now.
You know this one girl with hair like this?
Yes, that's Ramona Flowers.
She's out of your league.
You know her? Tell me now.
She just moved here. Got a job at Amazon.
I have to order something really cool.
Scott, are you waiting for the package you just ordered?
Maybe. Scott Pilgrim? Hi, I was thinking about asking you out, but then I realized how stupid that would be.
That's okay. You just need to sign for this, all right?
So do you want to go out sometime?
I say yes, will you sign for your damn package?
So yeah, 8 o'clock? Come to this Battle of the Bands thing.
You have a band?
Yeah, we're terrible.
Mr. Pilgrim! I'm Ramona's first evil ex-boyfriend.
What?
Wait, we're fighting over Ramona?
Didn't you get my email explaining the situation?
I skimmed it.
Mm-mm.
What was that all about?
If we're gonna date, you may have to defeat my 7 evil exes.
So what you're saying is we are dating?
I guess.
Does that mean we can make out?
Sure.
Scott Pilgrim!
Prepare to feel the wrath of the League of Evil Exes.
Ramona dated twins.
At the same time?
If you want something bad, you have to fight for it. Step up your game, Scott.
Combo!
Break out the L word.
Lesbian?
The other L word.
Lesbians?
What are you doing?
Getting a life.
You want to fight me for her? Why on earth would you want to do that?
Because I'm in love with her.
Scott Pilgrim versus the world.
Maybe next time we don't date the girl with 11 evil ex-boyfriends.
7.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Now, for all of us fellow nerds that enjoyed this fantastic movie, there's an even better article that I found on Stereo Gum that pretty much summarizes the movie and kind of looks at it as, and as they title it, which Nina Corcoran is going to be joining us, who wrote this fantastic article. Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is a 2010s indie rock time capsule. And we have Nina joining us right now in Entertainment Land. Nina, what's going on? How you doing?
Great. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm doing pretty good. Doing really good. As we're talking Scott Pilgrim, who wouldn't be doing good?
I know. This movie always makes me so happy.
Just to start off, let's travel back to the first time you've seen Scott Pilgrim versus the World and your first initial reaction.
Man, it's funny. I usually have the worst memory for things from growing up and even early adulthood, but I vividly remember this movie experience so well, I think because it was... I had never seen anything like it at the time, but I remember going to the movie theaters with my friends that opening weekend. We all wanted to see it, but for whatever reason, didn't admit to one another that we were intrigued by this movie, I think because the trailer looked a little less than impressive. And I just remember that opening, you know, that opening title sequence where Knives Chow enters Scott Pilgrim's like band rehearsal, like in a living room, basically, and they start playing a song and the camera zooms back and then it goes into the title sequence of showing the initial credits. And I just remember thinking, holy cow, this is so much cooler than I thought it was going to be. And I also didn't realize that a lot of actors I like were in the movie. And of course, over the course of that movie, there were so many in jokes. There were so many like asides and quick witty lines and even these like really sharp, fast edits. It just felt like it was like a whirlwind of so much stuff I liked all at once while being really self-aware and like parodying itself, which I, you know, really appreciated, especially looking back. I feel like holds up pretty well.
Yeah, and we're all creatives here, so like we get to use our creativity to come up with certain ideas. So you mentioned the trailer, which I agree. First seeing it was, I was like, okay, what is this? There's just way too, because there is too much going on in the movie in general. Like, let's be real here. Like, there's a lot of different things going on. But let's say, Nina, you were in charge of the trailer. Which scenes in particular would you put in?
I feel like I would choose a lot more of the understated ones, because it, or more so like the conversational scenes, because it feels like what they went with was much more like, this is an action movie, check out these fight scenes, which it definitely is, obviously, that's the core of the plot. But I think it, what it winds up coming across was kind of like an overly hammy, like, comic book movie, which at the time wasn't at its peak, like it happened in the 2010s. So it definitely made it feel like it was trying too hard to be something and felt cheesy. So I think, honestly, the best parts of the movie are these like very laid back, casual conversations between friends. And I feel like it would have maybe doing less of trying to summarizing the plot and more of just letting the dialogue speak for itself, or like basically friends like riffing on one another.
Yeah, I actually like that. And so you mentioned, so I wanted to get to your title here, which your article does a lot more than just focusing on the movie in particular. But obviously, we're both music fans, as we both shared in preparation for this. So big music nerds as well. And your title, it says it's a 2010s indie rock time capsule. Elaborate on what you mean and what you kind of elaborated in your article.
Yeah. So what's been interesting, I rewatch this movie like almost every year because I find it very funny and it always, you know, kind of picks me up. And what's been weird to notice is as time progressed, I feel like this movie kind of unintentionally captured the end of that indie rock movement throughout the 2000s and into the very beginning of the 2010s, where you had a lot of bands who were really, in a way, popular, but they also weren't playing huge. They weren't playing like House of Blues or venues of like a notable size. And they certainly weren't getting the credit that you would normally use statistically of like, you know, Grammys or where they fall on the Billboard charts and stuff like that. And, you know, the year right after this movie is when it felt like indie rock then like entered the mainstream consciousness, where Arcade Fire's album, The Suburbs, you know, one album of the year, and it beat Lady Gaga and Katy Perry and like people who are huge names. And you also had shortly after that, 2011 or 12 is when Spotify became available in the US, and people slowly switched from purchasing music either physically or digitally to just streaming as the new normal. And even on top of that, the way that bands get signed, I feel like it's a lot more commonplace now for a band to do very well online, not have any physical work, either an album you can hold or even just shows that you can go to, and they'll get signed solely on that and become incredibly popular. Where, you know, the internet was obviously around during the time this movie came out and before, but I think the way that indie rock was like viewed and could succeed prior felt very different than what it's become. And that's okay, but it's interesting to look back and feel like this movie really captures what that's like, especially on a local level with the battle of the bands and all of that, in a way that was just kind of natural to the script. But it's funny in hindsight because that wasn't the goal, but I think it's really nice to revisit almost just for that on its own. And it feels like a nice little like, oh yeah, remember when this is how things could work?
Absolutely. Well said there, Nina. And so there's three characters that I really like to focus on with this movie that I think, I mean, obviously Scott Pilgrim's the main character, what it's about, but I like to focus on Kim Knives and Ramona Flowers. All right. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving you the floor here. Your favorite character out of the three and why?
Oh man. I mean, Knives Chow is awesome. I think I related the most to her because she was in high school. I was just graduated from high school when this movie came out. It was like the summer between high school and college for me. And I think she captures like her character, but also the actor, Ellen Wong, do such a good job of capturing what it's like to like fall in love with music for the first time, where you already listen to music growing up and probably go to a show or two, but then you kind of discover what a wide range of music there is. Where I grew up moving around a lot, but especially in areas where there wasn't easy access to record stores, or even like I would go to FYE at the mall to be able to find records, which is feels like a very limited amount there. And her character, I think, does such a cool job of like discovering this bigger world of music, falling really hard for it, like designing her own band t-shirt, like going to every show. And there's that scene where she's dyeing her hair and she does that kind of lament of, oh my gosh, I didn't even know there was good music until 2 months ago, which is so funny to me looking back. Because you have that moment growing up of like, you find whatever genre that speaks to you and you're like, wait, I didn't know music could be like this, whatever that is for you. And of course, it's nice too to see a character who definitely gets roped into a relationship she shouldn't be in and can realize by the end of the movie that she has developed into someone who's like both knows her self-worth and also won't settle, which is refreshing for a character. Because I think a lot of the people in this movie are seen through Scott Pilgrim's eyes. So a lot of them are kind of 2D and serve just for his narrative, which makes sense. But it's nice that at least she gets to like, you know, kind of develop herself while still staying true to her interests.
That's right. Yeah. 10 years ago, I don't even want to know the kind of music I was listening to. And this film was definitely my intro. And that's why I really, you know, clung to your title. You know, indies, it focuses on, you know, the 2010s indie rock. And that's kind of what this film is, definitely important and monumental for my growth in terms of music listening. There's so much in here, little hidden gems. And I also wanted to focus on some of the characters, because there's obviously some characters in this movie ended up coming out to be, I mean, huge actors today. And 10 years ago, mm-hmm. I mean, like Aubrey Plaza, like,
yeah.
I wonder how many people knew of her back then as compared to now, like everyone knows her. Anna Kendrick, obviously. So I wanted to talk mm-hmm. underrated roles in this movie. Who would you say was the most underrated role? Who surprised you in this film?
Man, I do think it's so funny because Aubrey Plaza, like, you can tell it's her, but she almost doesn't. She looks like such a like young baby version of herself. I think hers is an underrated role to the point that I think you could almost maybe miss it because of her hairstyle and the fact that she is at a much younger age. Where one of the people I interviewed for that article was Brendan Canning from Broken Social Scene. And he, at one point in our interview, asked, like, oh, yeah, there were, you know, so many actors who became huge after this movie. And he asked for a refresher, and I named her. And he was like, wait, Aubrey Plaza was in that movie? And I was like, yeah, he had just said that they filmed at a coffee chain Second Cup around the corner from his house. And I was like, yeah, she was in that scene where they're at that coffee shop. And he was like, oh, my God, I didn't even remember that. And he was like, wow, that's crazy. She's great. Which I found pretty funny. But yeah, I think she's one. And I really love Kieran Culkin's role as Scott Pilgrim's roommate. I think he was like, he definitely, in my opinion, like steals the show of this movie. He's really funny. And he also delivers his lines in such a great self-aware way. But it's weird to me that it took a while for him to kind of get more prominent roles in movies and shows, because now Succession is, you know, really blowing up and he's in that. But that was underrated for sure. What about you? There's so many people to choose from.
Yeah, I was definitely, that's why I brought up Aubrey Plaza, because her character was definitely, Julie Powers was so underrated. Mm-hmm. And she was, I mean, she's our usual Aubrey self. I mean, I felt like in the film, just kind of, or at least the usual character she plays. I don't know her personally. I've seen interviews, but I've can't say that I've ever met her in person. So the characters she usually plays are kind of bitter, kind of angry. And she's kind of like that in here. She's totally jealous of Scott Pilgrim and does not like that he's hanging out with the Young Knives, as she makes plenty of jokes throughout the movie. So definitely Julie Powers is one, but also Kim. I felt like Kim was mm-hmm. a very important role as well, as, I mean, she was a big threat to Ramona Flowers and clearly made Scott a little uncomfortable when he was around her. And mm-hmm. You could feel that, I felt, at least in the film. Every time Scott is around her, he's just super uncomfortable, kind of feels a little vulnerable, loses self-confidence in himself. He's a different person around her than he is with Ramona mm-hmm. or Knives. So Kim is another one that I chose as an underrated character. So one more question before we get to who you've interviewed in this fantastic piece that you have at Stereo Gum. If you want to read our article, it's right in the description. Just scroll on down in the description, click the link, and you'll be able to read this fantastic piece that she has up at Stereo Gum. But I wanted to talk about the Evil Exes. I mean, you gotta we gotta talk Evil Exes. You can't talk Scott Pilgrim
definitely
without talking Evil Exes. So who was your favorite Evil Ex? I think I was obviously Chris Evans kind of threw me for a surprise when he jumps in the film. I was not expecting that as Lucas Lee. And you also, I like Matthew Patel. I like that he started everything and kind of threw Scott off a little bit. And as you said, Kieran yells, "Fight!" Yeah. You know, because Scott's a little confused, doesn't know what to do. He's like, what do I do? So I think Matthew Patel getting everything started was my favorite Evil Ex. Who was yours, Nina?
I mean, for whatever reason, the Chris Evans scene is so over the top and his acting is like so goofy. Just his eyebrows are so slanted. I feel like he plays a very good villain, which in hindsight's extra funny because he seems by all reports to be a really nice person. His character is so goofy that it makes me laugh a lot. But I also kind of like the Clash at Demon Head ex Todd Ingram, the bassist, because I feel like that one is a slow learning moment where you learn at the same time as Scott when it clicks in. And of course, it's at a moment when this ex happens to be playing on a stage to a huge crowd of fans, and it's so intimidating. And that's fun to see, since Brandon Routh, that actor, he played in Superman prior, and it's nice to see him play such a goofy, like cocky role where he kind of gets to be a jerk while still playing into the whole vegan trope and I'm better than you because I eat healthily and consider the environment. And it feels very much like if it didn't click in before then, which it should have, it's like clearly this movie is like everything about it is over the top. There's like magical realism everywhere, but it's nice to see someone who's like poking fun so much while still trying to have that like pseudo masculine front.
You talk to people, you did a nice little interview for this piece that you have talking about the 2010s indie rock time capsule. Go ahead and get into who you talked to reflect on the 10-year anniversary with Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, so I tried to talk to everyone who had a hand in either creating the music or creating the image of the people who portray musicians in this movie. And thankfully, most everyone was available except for Brie Larson and Beck. But so there were a lot of interviews. I talked to Edgar Wright, the director, Michael Bacall, the screenwriter, talked to the musicians who wrote some of this music, like Brendan Canning from Broken Social Scene and Emily Haynes from Metric, and Nigel Godrick, who, you know, helped solicit those bands to write these original songs and also wrote the score for the whole movie. And it was also nice to talk to Kathy Nelson, who was the music supervisor, so basically tracking down the songs so they could actually be used in the movie, and also Laura Jean Shannon, who was the costume designer. She had a lot of great insights into how do you create the visual appeal of these bands, which, you know, they're pulling from graphic novels, so it's not like she has to come up with everything on her own, but trying to bring that to life in a way that still feels like everyday, because this isn't a full-on comic book movie, while still making it feel like immediately recognizable and thematic to characters. Her insight was actually really interesting to talk to her, especially because, as I'm sure you know, people love this movie, but they also dress up as these characters all the time, whether it's full-on cosplay or just a simple Halloween costume. So hearing everyone's thoughts about, you know, essentially how do you make a fake band and how do you make them feel real was really interesting.
The Sex Bob-ombs. You know, I've been looking for them on Spotify. I've yet to find anything. I've been waiting 10 years later, still have not heard the first single official from the Sex Bob-ombs. I'm still waiting. I'm hoping to get that sometime soon. But in terms of, so 10-year anniversary, reflecting back, do you think, because this is a personal feeling of mine. So when this first came out, I personally feel like it wasn't quote unquote, and I'm doing air quotes. I know you can't see me, but I'm doing air quotes right now, quote unquote, it wasn't quote unquote cool to be a nerd about 10 years ago. But I feel like today it's almost a norm. We're all nerds in our own way. So like, I personally feel like this movie is bigger now than it ever was. Do you feel that way? And how do you think this movie has sustained throughout this time?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great point. Because, I mean, you know, when I talk about seeing this movie for the first time, I went with some of my closest friends who obviously we all trust one another and feel comfortable around one another. But even then, there's this weirdness of like slowly admitting, like, I actually want to see this movie that seems really geeky, like, don't judge me type of revelation, which speaks volumes that it feels weird to think that 10 years ago, if it felt like uncool to be into stuff like this, because, you know, comic books alone had such a cinematic renaissance where it's like they can be nominated for a Academy Award and stuff now. But yeah, it really felt like this movie cross-pollinated those fandoms in a way of like kind of underground music culture and comic books and also video games in a way that felt so delightful to watch. It was like enjoying all these Easter eggs and small nods and stuff, which weren't integral to just simply enjoying the plot or the film. But yeah, it's definitely, I think, become more accepted and now feels less like, I think it feels less like surprising to see all this stuff because it's so integrated now in pop culture where, you know, 10 years ago, if you were like, yeah, I'm going to go to Comic-Con or I'm going to, you know, whatever, E3, like people will be like, oh, you're into those things, versus now it feels completely normal to be into gaming and you don't have to either justify yourself as a gamer or defend yourself as like, oh, I only play a few games, but that's okay. It feels totally normal now. I mean, look at everyone who bought a Switch to play Animal Crossing at the start of all of this. Right? You're totally right. Like, this movie combined those things in a way before it became not only cool, but just like normal, or not like something you had to defend or hide or like downplay your interest in these things. Absolutely.
You are a music journalist as well, and I know you do fantastic work, and I wanted to ask one final question. So in terms of the music, there's obviously so many different performances throughout the movie. My personal favorite performance was Black Sheep. Oh my god, I love that. I love that entire scene. But so what would be your favorite song from the film?
Oh man, I love that opening song by Sexbomb. I think it's just called We Are Sexbomb.
That's not the actual title of the song.
We Are Sexbomb!
1, 2, 3, 4! Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mama serpentine, I got a breath of Liza, and my body's clean.
I listen to it so much. I listen to it all the time. It also has such a like really exciting up-tempo speed to it that I listen to it when I like really need to like hustle to get stuff done, or I'm just elated for whatever reason. But that song and performance especially, it feels so on the nose for when you go, and I'm sure this has happened for you a lot, when you go to a show or like a concert and you show up to see the opening band, or maybe not even just to be there early, and you don't know them and they just kind of like blow you away because they have a lot of either passion or just they can click together really well. It's not even that they're totally polished or anything. That song and their performance of it feels so fun to me. And it especially feels really raw in a way that's pretty accurate in terms of, like, technically speaking, there's multiple errors in that song of, like, missed notes, of, like, off-key yelling in the background, but it all works because they're all so in the zone. And obviously, you know, Beck wrote that song. He's, like, a Grammy-winning artist. But I love that one so much. It feels very much like, oh, look at these people, kind of like these slackers kicking around, and then they just blow you away with a song that's really tight.
Had a lot of fun geeking over the 10-year anniversary of Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Nina. I could probably do a podcast specifically on Scott Pilgrim. I could come up with a different topic on this movie. It felt really, first of all, it was awesome to find someone else who seems to love it as much as I do. So that's number one. And number two, so knowledgeable, so well-spoken. Nina Corcoran from Stereo Gum joining us. Nina, thank you so much for joining. You've been great. Absolutely great stuff. Everyone go see Scott Pilgrim if you haven't already. But Nina, thanks so much for coming on. Great stuff.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about this stuff, but it's especially nice to talk about it with you. Thanks.